Pulling up swing tech show. 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 Pulling up swing tech show.
Hey everybody out there, this is the Linux Link Tech Show coming at you on this Wednesday, March 3rd, 2004. Here.
March already,
yes indeed. And we're gonna get right at you with some really wonderful content tonight. We just have to play a quick promo for you. In the interim, please do yourself and us a favor and join us at our IRC chat channel. And you can do that. There's Dan's here. You can do that by putting your favorite IRC client at our server, which is the linuxlink.net, and joining us on channel Pound Tech Show. And with that in mind, join right up, and we'll make right sure that we're right back at you. Just hang in there.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or, maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or, just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hi again, everybody. We're back, and we are the show that cures what ails you. At least that's what they're saying on IRC right now. My name is Link, and I am one of your hosts tonight for the Linux Link Tech Show. The others would be the ever-popular Dan Washko. Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
And Alan the Man Metzler.
Hello.
Wow. What a deal we have going on here tonight. We have like a zillion people already on IRC just waiting to talk with us back and forth. That's kind of cool.
Hey, how about the promo cut today?
The promo cut, yes. Did anybody even notice that?
Improved.
Any of you guys out there, that are listening right now, notice that the promo got chopped back to my original promo. And just as a surprise and I guess a warning later, you can count on hearing Dan's... Dan's diatribe. We'll make sure we stick that right back in there for you because we have to support Linux because, you know, that's kind of how we got the show going, right?
That's right. And everybody wants to hear it anyhow.
That's right, man. It would be a bad thing if we didn't do that.
Yes, we
Dan's
would.
Pointing. What are you pointing at?
What
did I do with those contact lenses?
Aha.
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
Dan has no eyeballs, so we just kind of hang in
now,
there.
Now, see that? Oh, Alan. Not only did he mess up starting the program, but
all right,
he messed up my
now.
Keyboard.
This is cool, man. We're just, like, blowing everything up over here today.
Well, anyway. You know, I would have had these in prior to the show, but I spent from 7:30 to 10 minutes before the show trying to figure out why Audacity wouldn't work with ALSA.
And you still OSS haven't figured it out?
Well, I think I have it now, but you're over there in my seat, and I can't try it. Because that's why we heard the tech show thing playing. And Link was kind enough to chop out that promo stuff.
Right.
Heck of a job, Link. Heck of a job.
On my old crusty Dell laptop. Speaking of crusty Dell laptops, man, how is the laptop of Doom doing? Here in the Washington
residence. What is falling off this week?
The function key is hanging on like a loose tooth.
Mm.
It's really annoying to use it anymore. So that's why I don't, or I try not to. It's depressing.
Well, you know what's cool is that I'm really impressed that it actually still works. That's the thing. And that gives me great hope for my laptop, because my laptop is like... one. Hello.
My laptop is like one model off of
Dan's laptop of doom that keeps getting a crust beat out of it every week. So,
you know, the damn phone doesn't ring all day long, and sure enough, 5 minutes into the show, there it goes.
Oh yeah, man.
Remind me to plug it in before we leave.
It's like an every week occurrence.
Yeah, we got to remember to unplug it.
If we would just remember to turn the ringer off or unplug it, it would be. One of these days, we're actually going to, and Alan's working on this, guys. One of these days, we're actually going to be able to have select people call in and talk to us while we're doing the show. You can talk to us on the air, which is, of course, going to be, you know, the most cool invention ever sort of thing.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be within, well, maybe next week we may have something to play around with. I don't know if it'll work yet or not.
That'd be cool.
Because I did pick up on eBay, I picked up an old Heathkit phone patch for amateur radio, which I've been reading, and supposedly it can be used for the phone patch for what we're going to use it for as well. We may have to flip a couple switches on it to make it work, but it should be interesting.
Hey, that'll be a really cool thing if we can get that to work. That'd bring a lot of neat things together for us so that we can maybe get some external people to join us on the show and have a little fun.
And if nothing else, there's a big VU meter on it we can watch go back and forth.
Oh, yeah, pretty lights, man.
Pretty lights and a VU meter. It'll work well.
The geek show with the blinking lights, man. That's all you need to have.
So you're fixing the problem by throwing money at it, right?
Well,
off of eBay.
My free way of doing it didn't seem to work on it. My little phone recorders that we had, for whatever reason, just don't work.
Well, the ones I brought didn't work either, so don't feel bad.
So hopefully this will be the solution we're looking for on the cheap, at least.
That would be really cool because anybody who knows about this kind of patch equipment we're talking about, these things new, the digital phone hybrids is what they're called, they cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And so any way that we can possibly accomplish doing what we need to do on the show with zero budget is just cool with me.
I echo that. Echo.
All right.
So Alan's doing a heck of a job.
Does anybody have any news going on that they wanted to share?
I got a phone call today.
No.
From Microsoft.
Did you really?
It's probably one of the last people you want calling you.
I'll do, within the last week, I got one from Microsoft, too. But go ahead.
Oh, did you really?
Yep.
Was it about the TechNet briefing?
No, it wasn't. No, mine was a sales droid call where they called me up.
Sales
and they,
droid?
Yeah. No, a little Microsoft dude calls me up, and he's obviously, like, calling me from India or something like that. And he calls me up and gives me the whole, you know, how you doing, sir, business thing. And wants to sell my company, like a support contract for, you know, for all the web service things that we're doing and all this and that, and wanted to ask me a bunch of questions about, you know, what kind of services we have, you know, what kind of and network storage hosting services and any web services, intranet or extranet that we're doing in the company, and I said, oh yeah, sure. Absolutely, you can take a moment of my time and ask me questions. And they did. They asked me, you know, what kind of services I'm doing, and I told them, you know, we do some intranet web stuff and some development stuff on the web for our calling and things like that, and of course that perked his interest, and he wanted to know how he could get on it, in on it, and I promptly told him that he couldn't, and he asked why, and I said, well, because you know, I run Apache, and you know, I run Apache on Linux, and he said, well, you know, they wanted
but
to know how cost effective that was, and I said, well, it's free, you know.
And, it's free. I already know how to use it.
Yeah, so right. It's
free. Really, how much training involved,
like,
there?
Like, you know, I can spend $4,000 for this IIS server package that they want to send me, or I can spend nothing on this Apache package that I already have running. You know, it's really no contest. But it just went on and on and on like that, and he kept asking me about, like, network storage and stuff like that. Ooh, would you like to try Microsoft? And we'll have someone come out and talk to you and show and demonstrate this Microsoft network storage solution, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, I really don't need that because, like, I use Samba on a Linux box, you know. And he really was. It was pretty funny. He was kind of stifled at every corner. We got the long pauses, you know, and the
as he went to the next page.
Yeah, you hear flipping pages in the background. But it was a good thing. It was a good time.
Did you know what Samba was?
Probably not. I mean, the guy could speak English, but it, like, obviously it was not his first language. And I would venture to say that he probably was not even calling from inside the United States. So.
All right. Well, I got a call from Microsoft to go to a TechNet briefing. I was going to tell him, heck no, stop bothering me, but
the
part of what they're going to...
The family show, heck no.
Yeah. But he said, I can't remember what the first part, but the second part was going to be patch, Microsoft Security Patch Management. So I was interested to see what they have to say. And it's next week, I think it's March 9th, at the Regal Cinema in Easton. So if you're interested in going, I can post the invitation that I received. And everybody could show up. But I didn't have to sign up for a Hotmail or a piece of junk Microsoft web mail-based account.
Are you actually going?
I'm going to go. Like I said, I want to see what they have to say about the patch management. I think they're going to be handing out Nopix CDs there.
I think you should.
I was thinking maybe that's how they'll handle the patches, but...
Yeah, right. Patches, jeez. That might be fun. I should think about going just to get out, get away from work for a couple hours. Oh, man. Anything else? Alan, do you have any good news?
Well, not good news. I was reading over on Slashdot here that the SCO is targeted to Linux users now. They're going after AutoZone and Daimler Chrysler. So they didn't pick anyone with little pockets, to be honest.
No, they didn't. But you know what's really funny? I have a buddy of mine that works at AutoZone and has for quite some time. And the thing that I found humorous about that, and probably why the lawsuit happened, is that up until last year, they were actually running SCO Unixware.
Yeah, that's what this article says, that they're pissed off because they ported everything back over to Linux.
Yep.
And
they were running SCO,
and don't bother us anymore.
Now they're running Red Hat, as far as I have seen. So that's probably what happened with that, man.
Now, earlier this morning, I read a little bit about that and a comment that was posted, which made me run over to Groklaw, because that's where I get most of the in-depth information if I want to find out about it. And, of course, they were hit with the distributed denial of service attack today, mm-hmm. apparently. But I had picked up earlier this morning that the reason they targeted those companies as being former SCO users, but apparently they were running some kind of applications that in a SCO emulation type mode or whatever that normally a Linux user wouldn't be doing, but because they were former SCO customers, they were still running some of the applications through an emulation layer that I think SCO said, well, you really can't do that.
That's part of their accusations, right?
Right. However, I don't know how realistic that is. But
well, if you follow along with the AutoZone guys, you can see that they have posted in several places that they had, before they migrated, they had switched all their code base, and they never used any SCO libraries on Linux, but this, of course, will all be settled in a court of law if it ever makes it that far. And I'm gonna really push if it ever makes it that far, too, because the one news story that I was really looking at this week, and this was like Monday, was Germany, according to Slashdot, Germany muzzles SCO, well, according to Slashdot and Groklaw. Have you guys seen that one yet?
Yeah, I read about that. That's really good.
Hysterical.
And the last requirement was SCO can only sue their own customers. I think it was the fourth requirement of the lawsuit, that SCO only has the right to sue their own customers.
That's a really good one. If I can actually get to the page, because of the DDoS attack, it's kind of hard. If I can get to the page, I'll summarize it. Maybe I can hit the old Slashdot page.
Oh, Slashdot getting hit by DDoS attack also?
No, just Groklaw as far as I know.
Oh, I thought you were going to Slashdot to pull up the information.
No, I was trying to go right to Groklaw and do it. Right.
Do they have any idea who launched the Groklaw one?
SCO.
Yeah, it could be, you know.
That was interesting because yesterday, I think it was, Groklaw, well, there was a couple of articles going around, and Linux Insider was another one that apparently there was an interview with Daryl McBride who slammed the person who does Groklaw for being a patsy for IBM, which wasn't true, and published a lot of unverified, for lack of a better word, information, and the journalist never followed up on it, which there was a rebuttal on Groklaw from the person who runs it. Now, I can't remember her name. Anyway, the next day, of course, there's a denial of service attack. Huh? Go figure.
Okay, I got that. Here's a small summary of the thing that happened over in Germany. Basically, what happened is SCO went to, you know, got its day in court in Germany, and the courts decided these four things in a nutshell. The SCO group over in Germany has agreed not to allege any more that Linux contains SCO's unlawfully acquired intellectual property. The settlement also forbids SCO from claiming that if end users are running Linux, that they might be liable for breaches of SCO's intellectual property. Also, they cannot say that Linux is an unauthorized derivative of Unix. And finally, SCO in Germany is prohibited to threaten to sue Linux users unless they bought SCO Linux or Caldera Linux, which is really interesting. So SCO cannot threaten to sue a Linux user unless they purchased a version of Linux that was put out by Skull, which is really funny. But that's it in a nutshell. I wish I could get to the Groklaw page, which has a little bit better summary. But
with the first,
I'm on the Groklaw page.
Much, the first three, they pretty much throw out most of the stuff they're suing for over here.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And that was the most exciting part about reading this little article, is that, you know, a lot of the laws and the legal system in Germany is. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar to a lot of the things that we do here. And these guys didn't find it too much of a stretch to finally figure out that SCO was blowing hot air. And told them specifically that, you know, you're blowing hot air. We don't want you saying anymore that Linux contains unlawful code. We don't want you saying that you're going to sue anybody running Linux unless they bought it from you.
In the first place.
You know, the whole thing, don't threaten anybody anymore, don't say anything anymore, because you're full of hot air, can't produce any evidence, so go away. And I really can't wait till that happens here. You know it's got to be not far off, man. You can't have a one country decide, you know, unequivocally that they're full of garbage.
Full of crap there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens.
I mean, granted that probably the United States is the most openly litigious society, much to our disadvantage, but still. It was funny.
Too many lawyers.
Yeah. Too many lawyers. In fact, I just read some kind of a joke about that today. I don't remember exactly how it goes, but it went something about these two researchers talking back and forth, and one researcher sent the other one in to grab this guy's body because they were going to cut it up and use it for, I don't know, you know, research, I guess.
Research, and, I would hope, yes.
And anyway, the one guy goes in, or the lab assistant goes in and comes back out and says, I can't find the body, but I found the brain. And the one guy says, you know, well, who took the body? And he says, well, I think the body got up and left by itself. And he said, well, what do you mean? The brain's laying there on a chair. And I said, well, it could be out practicing law somewhere. But it was one of the, you had to be there. But it was funny.
The Tech Show Comedy Shop.
Yeah, it was one of them things. It was, trust me, it was funny. I didn't do it justice. But what are you going to do? Anyway, anyone? What do we got? Like dead air here, man. No one's talking. What's going on?
Well, that was all I really had. So
you exhausted your news forge.
I've
your slash time.
I have not actually been on the computer all that much, with the exception of work. On it. And even at work, I haven't even been on the internet because they've been cracking down on people randomly surfing everywhere. So I've been like hanging back because I don't feel like being held up as a poster child anywhere. And I've just been on a project at work that, you know, over time I've just come home and I haven't even been touching the computer. So that was the only thing I dug up this evening.
Well, I can't say that I have not been touching the computer at home or at work, but I've been really busy at work and I've had my fill of the suits this week, as well as I'm sure Dan has. Our wonderful suit IT management. You know, I've heard from a lot of people who are actually good IT managers that managing IT people is like herding cats. Well, that's probably true. Probably. But I can tell you from personal experience that there are a lot of managers out there who think that they're IT managers who have absolutely no idea what in the hell they're doing. And unfortunately, there are a few people at my place of employment that are like that.
Understandable.
Much to my dismay. So, and I've had to deal with them this week. You know what? Here is the problem. Here is the problem with people in general, suits in general. Suits who don't know anything about computers. If you are a yuppie suit person and you're in management, you automatically think that computers are magic. Okay?
Don't let the smoke out.
Yeah, it's magic. Just tell the magician over there, you know, that IT guy, the magician, tell him to push his magic button, and the data magically and mysteriously pops right up. It's not only is it magic, but it's instantaneous magic, you know? Never mind that you might have 700 megabytes of information to restore off of a backup that's 14 years old. It's magic. And it's instant magic, you know? And that's the kind of stuff, you know, and you just can't explain anything to these people. You can't explain to them, like, you know, grabbing a 7-year-old tar archive and trying to pull out 750 megs of miscellaneous data takes time.
It takes a little bit of time.
They have no concept of that whatsoever. Well, can you get it done, you know? It's like 10 o'clock, right? Can you get that done by, like, 11? No.
I may be able to find the tape by 11.
Yeah. It's just not going to happen, you know? And I don't know. That's the kind of week I've been having. Foolish people. But understand there's a lot of other people out there in our field that are having the same problem. So just so you know, I'm having that kind of problem too. And you are not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fiery flames.
What Dan says. By golly.
What are you looking at, Alan?
Looking for you. It's your turn. How was your week?
I've had better weeks. Much better weeks.
Is it better than last week?
Though? It's a lot better than last week.
That's good.
Actually, it's been a lot better than last week. Got some stuff kicked off with the help of Master Fezzedin over here. But I don't know if we want to get into that right now, or do we want to take a break because it's 9:28?
We probably ought to take a break, huh?
Take a break.
Something, maybe.
Do you have a song?
I do have a song. In fact, let me find it real quick here. I got email from some people this week, early this week, or either that it was over the weekend, from a group called X11. That is the letter X dash the number 11. And I believe we played some of their stuff before, and I picked this up off their website. It's called Nowhere But the Night. And give yourself a listen, and we'll catch back up with you in just a couple of minutes.
No.
Questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux users group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments?
Only once. Dan's not cutting in anymore. Actually, he is cutting in. Are you cutting in, Dan?
Am I cutting in now?
Yeah. Go ahead and cut in. That's cool.
Cut one in.
Cut one, yeah.
Well, Link wants me to cut in because we received a nice little email this past week on Monday, March 1st, to be exact,
right,
from a... Tim Remo, it's Sprocket Sprout Open Source Design.
He lives in New York City.
I said that he's been listening to the archive versions of our show, which is great. Thank you very much, Tim.
Yeah.
During the week, he had a question about
Tim gets the woohoo.
Yeah, configuring Linux to run through Virtual PC on OS 10.3. So he can try out stuff like the GIMP and Soddy Potty and other sorts of things. Now, of course,
The GIMP and Soddy Potty both will run on OS X, provided you have the X server installed, either Apple's OS X X server, or you can run the Darwin ports. You can get Fink, which will pull down X free for OS X. So once you have those,
don't they make a special? They make a special GIMP, right? For
well, yeah, but it still requires OS X. I mean,
well,
the
yeah,
X server, the X server on OS X, either the Darwin X server, the or you can get the one that Apple includes with Panther and makes her available
for
as a beta
because,
download.
Like, you know, Dan is the rich one out of us three, and actually has that nice Mac laptop.
Well, the GIMP runs. Now, I tried to get Soddy Potty on here yesterday, but it is an unstable package, and I wasn't able to compile it last night, but I'm not giving up yet. Now, as for virtual PC running Linux, virtual PC is a Microsoft product.
Boo.
Yeah.
Boo. No, we can't.
Apparently, or Microsoft purchased it.
Yeah, well, we can't advocate anybody using that kind of stuff, you know. It's just...
Now...
It's not cool.
We sent him, I guess, our initial responses back to him were about how he could get Red Hat on his machine, or...
You mean Yellow Dog?
Yellow Dog.
Yes.
Red Hat. Yeah, Red Hat, Yellow Dog. Red Hat.
That's my suggestion, like, I always see a lot of these people talking about, how do I get this really cool open source package to run on my OS X, you know, so that I can try this neat Linux package out. And I keep telling everybody, run Linux on your Mac, you know?
Yellow Dog.
Yeah. There are several ports of Linux out, several versions of Linux out there that will run on the Mac. Yellow Dog puts one out. Gentoo has one out.
Debian
has one out, and there's three or four other ones too. There's even like a Slackware one. It's not an official one, but it's Slackware nonetheless, called Slackintosh. there's a lot of them out there, and just by the way, we also have to put in a very nice plug for Yellow Dog, who actually sends some goodies to our lug every now and then, and has recently sent us. Sent us a few copies of the Yellow Dog 3.01 or 3.11 or something like that.
Which now is going to make me have to go out and buy like a machine I can actually use it on.
Yeah, man, it's really cool stuff. It's really cool stuff. And for those of you who have Macs that like have never thought of, you know, Macs that maybe only run 9.1 or something like that, and have never thought of running Linux on those Macs, you must try this out because it makes your Mac run phenomenally. This is you know, the voice of personal experience. I really, really dig running Yellow Dog on those Macintoshes. So check it out. Anyway, Dan, I interrupted you. Sorry.
Yes, you did.
I had to put
again.
My little promo thing in there.
So... Although we didn't get much of a chance to explore the virtual PC running Linux on top of OS X, we'll look into that throughout this week and see what we can come up with, because we certainly don't want to leave any of our listeners hanging.
Absolutely
with unanswered
not.
Questions. Another thing that you might want to get be interested in trying to do is check out the New York City Linux Users Group, the MYLUG. I mean, there's a couple of them in New York City, I think, or in the surrounding areas.
There's
somebody's bound to be there.
There's a NYLUG. I think there's a separate one for Long Island.
Yes.
And then they also just started up some really cool BSD user groups and things down there, too. So, of course, you know, down there is relatively speaking, it's down there from us, but...
Right.
Would that be up there from us?
But I think, yeah, up there from us. Or is it over there
it's
from
kind of
us?
Over there, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Somewhere from us. But anyway, what's I think one of the most interesting things about that email is that he's an open source, Tim is an open source artist. And hopefully we'll be able to see some of his work in the very near future.
Oh, yeah.
And if he
definitely.
Has, I did not see a website included.
I didn't either.
And I hope that maybe he does have a website somewhere. And if you do listen, Tim, send us your website so we can help promote it for you. Because I'm sure all our listeners right now are very interested in what you've done and what you're doing and where you'll be going in the very near future.
Absolutely. Bring it on, you know, and if you have some spare time, you want to make a couple of nice graphics for the Linux Link Tech Show, well, we'll be happy to look at them, too. So. Never, never look a gift horse in the mouth, especially a talented one, so go to it, man. But anyway, you were talking about earlier. You want to
talk
about?
Well, a few months back, I think I had mentioned that we got one of those backup appliances.
Right.
A little server appliance. And it's running Red Hat, a very stripped down version of Red Hat Linux 8, and NetVault's backbone software for doing a backup. And we had it delivered at the end of the school year last year, and we just started putting it into play earlier in the fall. And ever since then, we've never been able to do a successful backup that hasn't hosed our network in some way. It was kind of
disappointing, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It wasn't something that I would say really made Linux shine brightly amongst all the other beacons of light it's thrown out in the school district. This was not one of its shining moments. But what's interesting is we finally come down to what the heart of the problem is. And the heart of the problem is, number one, the software doesn't support the version of NetWare that we're running, 6.5, currently running. But we did have issues with 6.0. And those issues stem back to the fact that the company that produced this appliance wasn't really able to support the backbone software properly. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of mistakes made in the whole process. But and I'm going to butcher his name, and I can't. I left his business card. What was interesting is Backbone has a representative or a tech support person that's out of Easton. And his name is Doug, I think. But I'm probably wrong about that, and I'll have to look it up.
But he's got a name, so what's
that? He's got a name.
Yeah, he's a representative from Easton.
And when he walked in, I'm like, I've seen this guy before. And he was there for a little while, and my boss would field questions that he would have back to me, because my boss doesn't really, well, he's not my boss anymore, former boss, because he knows that I know Linux a lot better than he does. And then eventually the guy said, hey, aren't you one of the operators of the LVLUG? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I was at the meeting last month. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember. I thought I recognized you from somewhere. So that's cool. I mean, he came down and he was helping us out, or helping Jim out with the backbone stuff, which is really nice. But it's unfortunate because he pointed out that the company that sold us this was not giving us the adequate support for the software, and that had they contacted the backbone tech support a long time ago, our issues probably would have been resolved. But it's nice to have them coming out to help us out and get this problem fixed. But even more importantly than that was Lincoln Fezzenden came to our rescue last week with his backup suggestions that are now up on his blog. Some really good ideas. And over the weekend, I was able to successfully, without a problem, back up all those servers that we wanted to back up and begin doing incremental backups throughout the week.
Cool.
And that's been coming off without a problem so far. It's a really, really, really great idea. I thank you very much, Link. And it just goes to show that a simple find and tar command, pipe
yeah,
guitar,
man,
really does the trick.
That is the all-time easiest way to do it.
Yeah, I'm woefully... I rarely ever do backups, unfortunately.
See, now that's
except when I go to like change over from, you know, when I did from Red Hat to Slack, where I backed.
That's a problem I find with a lot of people is they don't do backups and they think that, you know, a lot of people think that in order to do a backup you need to, you know, go download one of those backup programs and maybe have a tape drive or, you know, something like that, and it really really isn't anywhere near that difficult. You can, like I said, hit my blog.
Well, yeah, I'd had the same thing.
Just a couple of
tarkamans. You'd posted a long time ago when Dan was running the forum.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's why I had that printed out. I've been using that. But like I said, I don't do it often enough.
Oh, dude. Got it. You got to do it, man. If you stick that stuff in a cron job, you're done. You never even have to look at it except for maybe, you know, delete the old backups every now and then when you start running out of space.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff is a lifesaver, man, and it's so easy to get your stuff back off of a tar archive as opposed to, like, going through God forbid you have to go through CPIO or something to get your stuff back. But, yeah, check that right out. And do you have anything else to add, Dan?
Well, with regards to the backups?
With regards to, you know, whatever.
Well, they're working really great. I'm very appreciative for your help. And it's one of the things that I've been meaning to do for a long time is really get down and dirty with a lot of the commands, editing commands and formatting and searching commands like find, and then incorporating them in the scripting. Because that's where I'm pretty weak right now is on that bash shell scripting. And it's not that difficult. It's just getting down there and learning a few of the basics, so you could really whip out a lot of great things.
Yeah, just familiarize yourself a little bit with what commands you have available on the system, and bang, you're going.
Yeah.
You're going. You have anything you'd like to add there, Sir Alan?
Do your backups,
yes. Well, before we are out of time for this week's show, I would like to tell you all about the coolest piece of software I have found in a long time.
Is this about Microsoft Office again?
No. This is about a program called Synergy 2. Synergy 2. And if you had been reading my blog, you'd have noticed it because
when did you post that?
Like 2
today?
Days ago, yeah.
two days ago or today?
March 2nd.
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
Wait a minute. How could you have posted it March 2nd?
March 2nd, 8:41
and I read your
PM,
blog
man.
This morning.
You're not paying it.
No, I didn't read it because I was at work this morning. I didn't read your blog this morning.
Dan, work this morning. Oh, my goodness. No, the program is called Synergy 2. The reason I want to give it special mention here is, like I said, this is the neatest thing that I've seen in a long time. Basically, it's a software-type KVM program. And it allows you, for those of you people who like a lot of the geeky people I know, myself included, have more than one system on their desk. If you have multiple monitors, you know, whether it be a complete desktop system or you have your desktop and your laptop next to it, a lot of us work that way, so we have access to more than one computer, more than one monitor. We like to have that extra screen real estate and that kind of thing. If you're doing that sort of thing either home or at work, and you have multiple monitors, multiple systems, this program will allow you to use a single keyboard and mouse across both of your monitors, regardless of the fact that they're multiple systems. In fact, it will let you use it across multiple systems and multiple monitors, a lot like a Xenorama display. Like Xenorama display is you have one computer and you have multiple monitors for that. This is you have multiple computers, each of them have their own monitor, and you can use a single keyboard and mouse across any of these simply by dragging your mouse off the side of the screen or the top or the bottom or what have you, and right onto the next screen. It's the neatest thing, man. And I think two things are really, really cool about this. One, much unlike a Xenorama display, when you are working on your one of your other displays, like whatever you're doing over there, it's actually running on that computer, not on your first computer. So, you know, you get a little bit more horsepower. If you start lagging out and running a bunch of things on one computer, you just simply whip over to the next monitor and whatever you run over there runs on that computer.
Mm-hmm.
Lickety split. The other thing is that you can actually, now right now you can't drag applications back and forth between these two screens, but you can cut and paste text.
Between the
two computers, which is really cool. You know, you do a little text search on one computer, you drag your mouse over it, cut the stuff over, and paste it into an application on your first computer or vice versa. It's really, really slick. And probably the best application that I have for it right now is that I'm one of those guys that perpetually uses my laptop and my desktop at work. Now, I have one of those laptops that has, first of all, it has a little glide point, touch point thing in the front, which I hate. You know, I just hate those things. They work like crap.
Oh, I love those things.
I can't they annoy the hell out of me, man.
It's the little tab in the middle that little joystick thing in the middle.
I like the little button in the middle a lot better. At least that's got some more tactile thing going on for me. The little glide point thingy, if you got like flat, you know, if you ever play guitar or something like that, you got flat calluses on your fingers, you cannot use one of these things, man, because you'll be, you know, going over to one side and all of a sudden it'll jump across the screen, and it's really a pain in the butt. Or you can do what a lot of people do, which is like, you see people with these, they use their pens or something like that,
yeah,
the bottom end of their pen, and they do the thing with that, but that ruins them.
Oh yeah, you're not supposed to use anything but your finger.
Yeah, that ruins the glide point. They get all, you know, they get dented and scratched up, and then they don't work to begin with. So, but anyway, enough of that. I have this thing with the glide point in the front of the keyboard, so there's all of this. There's like a half of a hand worth of space before you can even get to the keyboard on this thing. So you're always having to stretch over everything to type on the laptop. Well, with this Synergy 2 program, all you have to do is just flick your mouse over to the laptop screen and do your thing and type on your normal keyboard where you're all comfortable and everything, and, you know, have my nice little gel wrist rest thing going on and the little, USB, you know.
Your mouse?
Mouse and the whole thing. It's great, man. It's just outstanding. And I never have to plug in an extra cable to get it to work, which is even better, you know. Because, like, you could use a real KVM, but if you use a real KVM, then you got to do, you know, you need to flick the switches and things.
You got to reach over and flick the switch.
Yeah, and you got all, you know, mess of cables and rats and this and stuff going on. And this is just, like, way, way, way convenient. It's cool. But for those of you who want to check this out, and I really, if you run more than one headed computer on your desk at a time, you're going to want to check this out. Go over to...
What does this doesn't share the display also, does it?
No. It lets you use, like, each separate display.
Right.
Just as it is. You just move your mouse and roll your mouse over to the other display.
So it's not something where you can actually move it over and then it would show the display of the other computer on one
No,
screen.
It's, you can't, if you have two screens
It won't
already.
Work like that, will it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that would be like VNC or something like that.
Right.
This is like you have the two displays sitting next to each other anyway, and you just want to use your regular keyboard and mouse on both displays. But check it out. It's really cool. You're going to find it at synergy2.sourceforge.net. Check it out. Tell me what you think. Good.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it right now.
Put the link on the... On the IRC for us.
It's cool, man. But the only thing about it that really irritated me is I cannot get it to compile on NetBSD yet. And that's because there's some kind of a pthreading issue. But I'm running a really old version of NetBSD. I'm running 1.5.2 on a machine at work. And what I'm going to do is eventually when I can get it, you know, 10 minutes to do it, I'm going to upgrade that computer to 1.6.2, which is just released, by the way. All you NetBSD fans, 1.6.2 is out. I'm going to upgrade to 1.6.2, and once the 1.6 on happens to have native pthreading, so it's entirely possible I'm going to be able to get it compiled, and then I'll be able to move my little mouse and keyboard across three different systems, which is going to be even better, man. But it's just so cool, man. You don't have to, you know, you get comfortable. If you're running with multiple keyboards, like I always have one in front of the other kind of thing, not side to side.
Okay.
And
you flip one onto your lap and type a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, and you have the one that's really comfortable and the one that really isn't comfortable, but you just put it somewhere where you can reach it if you have to. And you just get the one that's comfortable and get in the right spot with your little mouse and you're, you know, off you go. All you have to do is move stuff back. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. But
I think I'm going to check it out.
Oh, yeah. It's a must check out.
With all the monitors you have here? Yeah.
I know, it's not a bad idea. I could have my laptop here, the streaming box there, my main workstation there, and just right across.
Yeah, man. Just have you, you know, set it up. The suckiest part about this whole thing is, like, I just got through redoing my entire computer setup at home, and I dropped one of the monitors.
To make it comfortable so you could have all the monitors.
So that I could get rid of one of the monitors on my desk. You know what I mean? Like, I run my server, I run a headless server now on my desk, and I just, there's no monitor on it at all. And if I had, you know, and I kind of had to set it up that way so that everything fit on my desk without me having to put computers on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I have pets. When you have pets and your computers are on the floor, you collect fuzz. So I try to put them up
on
the desk.
Fuzz even when they're not on the floor.
Oh yeah. So I put them up on the desk so I wouldn't, like, collect fuzz and start a fire one of these days. And in order to do that, I had to lose monitor off one of the systems. So now I don't have two monitors side by side anymore on my desk. And that now, of course, is when I find this really cool Synergy program where I could have made really good use of those. So that kind of irritates me. But, you know, like my wife will attest to, I do happen to have three or four extra systems rolling around that I can, you know, if I can find a good aesthetically pleasing place to put them, they probably will happen.
We'll all be running all at once.
Yes, indeed. Because that's just, you know, it's just more fun than a guy should have for any few minutes, you know. But anyway, I digress. The time is getting late, gentlemen. Do we have... any of you guys have anything you'd like to add before we close this stuff out tonight?
Not really.
No? Going once.
Now, one of the things that was brought up about the security issue of that, and if you really want to, I mean, these systems are probably all right next to each other. You could just slap a switch in there.
KVM?
No, a switch. Switch. Little 10-port switch or something. What, $20? And that way the traffic is only going to go to the designated ports, not across the rest of the network.
Oh, yeah, they're talking about it on the IRC.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Because it's IP, and they're talking about pushing unencrypted IP between the systems. However, that may be true, but you can push it through an SSH tunnel instead. Which is, you know... For anybody that runs multiple systems already, they probably already know how to do an SSH tunnel. They're not very hard.
But then you bring up the problem of the SSH tunnel. Oh, wow. How are you going to do that on Windows? On a Windows machine. SSH doesn't run. Well, I think the only version of SSH that runs, well, there's PuTTY. I don't know if that'll work. But
yeah,
you have to buy
tunnels through PuTTY.
Well, there you go.
I'm pretty sure.
Putty.
But either way, you know, I've heard this particular argument.
Windows. You don't need to encrypt anything anyways.
Exactly. I've heard this particular argument more than a few times, and I keep thinking to myself, like, you know, who is going to put something like this on computers that are directly connected to the net anyway? You know what I mean? Most likely what we're talking about here is a situation where you're on an internal network, and you're going back and forth from machine to machine on an internal network. You know, what's the big deal? If there's a little unencrypted IP... Hell, I use Telnet unencrypted on my internal network. The only person that can get to anything in there is me. So, you know, you'd have to... In order for anybody to get into my internal network and sniff through my Telnet sessions, they would, of course, have to have a way in or have physical access inside my house, and that's just not going to happen. So, I don't see it as a really big problem. But like I said, if it is, simply fire up a SSH tunnel and...
Don't use it.
Through there.
Is that much of a problem? Don't use it.
Yeah. If you don't like it, man, you know, go buy yourself a little KVM switch or something. But I thought it was really cool.
I think it looks really cool. Now I'm going to have to find a way to arrange my desk at work so I can have more than one computer next to it.
Oh, man. Well, when I first tried it at work, I was truly expecting... For it to be like, you know what I mean, unresponsive and laggy, and the mouse to be like jumpy or stuff. And you look at the documentation, and it says may cause occasional what is it, occasional phantom mouse clicks and stuff like that. So I'm like, all right, I'll try it, but it's going to be really crusty, and I'm not going to like it. Dude, I put that stuff on there, and the entire day, I used it on my laptop and my main workstation at work, back and forth, just like I had unplugged my optical mouse and plugged it into my laptop, the same with my keyboard that I have at work. It was a beautiful thing. Never hiccuped once. Everything went right through the way it was supposed to. Was nice and smooth, even with a decent optical mouse too. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not one of those 200. What was that 200
DPI?
200 DPI or something. This is like a 400 DPI Belkin optical mouse. Good mouse. And nice and smooth. Never jumped. Never did any funny crap. And another cool thing that I noticed is that my laptop screen and my desktop screen are two different resolutions. Laptop is running 1024 by 768, and my desktop is running 16 by 1200. Mm-hmm. But somehow it like quantizes everything down. If you go up at the top of my desktop at 1600, you know, or 1200, and you go over in the very top corner, it pops out in the top corner of your laptop, of my laptop, which is 1024 by 768. So it kind of merges everything down to the right size and expands it back and forth. And but no problems at all. Everything was nice and smooth. It was the neatest thing I played with all day. I can tell you that. You know.
Yeah. You know, I have something I was going to bring up.
Okay.
A little reminiscence here. Because everybody seems to like it when we reminisce at the end of the show about things long gone. And what was that? How did I get on this train of thought? What?
I remember.
Back in the day.
How did I get on this train of thought? I was thinking about going to the arcades back in the day. You know, before high school even. Because I think it was around when I was in high school. And the high school, that thing started to change. But you'd be able to go to an arcade with like $5 worth of quarters and have a heck of a good time playing.
And you only went with five?
Well, you know, that's what my allowance was when I was in elementary school. Okay. All right? Maybe we weren't all rich like you, Mr. Moneybags.
You're getting them older than you guys.
Yeah, well, when they had arcade games coming out,
my arcade game was two sticks and a rock. You know?
Yeah, weren't you playing Jacks and marbles?
And we liked it.
I walked through 47 miles of snow, bare naked, uphill both ways to get to them two sticks.
But I mean, you could go in there with a few dollars.
The reason I didn't get through college.
You could go into an arcade with a few dollars and spend an hour or two in there playing a whole bunch of different games. Have you been into an arcade recently?
75 cents a dollar a game anymore.
But have you seen the kind of games that are in there?
Dance Dance Revolution.
You got what? Basically, you got Dance Dance Revolution. You're right. You got some kind of game with a gun, where you just shoot. And then there's a fighting game and some racing games. What happened to all the other cool games? You know, like
Pac-Man.
Well, Pac-Man. There's Pac-Man.
I'm dating myself now. Yeah.
You know, there were Space Invaders, Galaga, Gorf.
Galaga was awesome.
Yeah.
R-Type, Radon. Raiden. Was what?
There was that robot one where you had the two joysticks to move them around. I can't remember what the name of that one was, though.
Battle Zone?
No, it was. I'll remember it, but go on.
Speaking of remembering, what was that game? It was an old game, just line graphics. It was geometric shapes. You were kind of like a little crawling spider at the top. Started with a Z. And you would shoot. Things would come up. Little shapes would come up,
Tempest.
And you'd shoot. Tempest. That's
Tempest
right.
Tempest was cool.
I was thinking about that. But
Battle Zone was the same way. The Battle Zone was the 3D tank that was just
right.
Just the line graphics, and that was one of my favorite ones.
That was a fun game.
That was awesome.
And Karate Champ, the old Karate Champ, 1942.
Kung Fu Master.
Now, granted, those games pale in comparison to the graphic extravaganzas that you have in there now. But, you know, Dance Dance Revolution isn't really kicking out the graphics there.
Right.
I'm not going to put down the game up. Obviously, it's a big hit with the younger crowd, but
I mean, it was like every
people who can dance.
What? Yeah, people who can dance.
Young people with coordination.
Sure. Ever since like Mortal Kombat came out and the Tekken series, the games have just been, you know, it went from the fighting genre straight into what we have today, and there's not a lot of variety anymore.
No, I miss the older ones.
Yeah,
even
I mean,
though they, like I said, even though they were very basic games on it, to me they were just fun.
You mean the ones that required you to use a little bit of imagination and stuff?
Well, yeah, you had to use a lot of imagination on a lot of the games.
Granted, now they're like 75 cents to a dollar.
Yeah.
Right.
And it just doesn't seem practical to go in and play them anymore.
No.
Or not as fun.
On my vacation from hell, we were down by the boardwalk, and I walked into an arcade place, and I found an Asteroids machine that I swear to God had to be the original on it. Yeah, it was still quarter, beat to living crap. I mean, this thing came right out of 1984. Roughly, or about whenever Asteroids came out, I don't remember when. But I swear to God, it had to be original. it was that old. It was just stuck back in the corner of an arcade. You know, I guess it slowly moved from the front of the arcade, just like kept being pushed
into the
back,
end of the back corner,
a dusty corner. Nobody was playing with it. I had a great time. I dumped a couple dollars worth of quarters into that.
Right. Those were good stuff, though, man. You know.
Remember the real old game? I think it was before Space Invaders, even. It was, you were an army jeep, and there was a helicopter, and it was all, again, it was black and white, or actually green and white, line graphics, and they had a big, like, the screen was broken up by what was a rock, but actually it was just this big piece of plastic over top of the monitor, and you could drive around the plastic, and you were in a jeep, you had to shoot the helicopter before the helicopter shot you, and it would come around, and when the helicopter was coming, you hear just... I forget what that was called.
I don't remember that one.
Sounds like
Robotron,
almost.
I think, was the name of the one I was thinking of. I think that was it.
You know what I miss? I used to like the 3D ones, you know, the 3D line graphics ones, and my all-time favorite is... like the original Asteroids.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The ones just with the 3D. Yeah, just the 3D
was that line drawing
and stuff like that. It had like a bubble glass screen, you know? This is like way back, man.
Way back,
I wonder if that's like even pre-Pac-Man kind of thing. It's right around then.
No, Asteroids was before Pac-Man. I remember we got Asteroids for the Atari 2600. And it was in color,
which wasn't
that bad, but it wasn't
the
exact
same
thing.
Somewhere floating around, I have that.
Where you had the turning and forward and back, you do go forward, and then to slow down, you'd have to turn around and go in the opposite direction. And a little UFO would come out shooting lasers.
I think it's another picture of Dan's dog, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, there's some bad pictures in there that I haven't weeded out yet. It's only been running for like 3 or 4 months. You know what? Speaking of that, I wanted to bring up another thing because we got some time. And Missile Command was brought up by Brian.
Missile Command
was really good. Crazy Climber. Remember that? You never saw Crazy Climber?
I probably have, but it doesn't sparkle.
They still have it at Q-Mart. Yes. You can find some of those older games.
Oh, you mean the mechanical game? You talking about the mechanical game?
No.
The dude climbs
up. I'm talking about the guy where you're the guy and you climb up the side of the skyscraper and, like, people throw pots out the window and there's a monkey.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
No one doesn't strike chord.
And know what else is there? Vanguard is there. Remember
Vanguard? Was cool, man.
Yeah,
and I think Stargate's there, too.
Defender.
Yeah.
Remember Defender? Defender was a rocking game.
Defender. That was something, huh?
That was cool.
Time to get the MAME going again.
I'm going to have to... Yeah, MAME, nothing, man. I'm going to whip up my my old Atari 2600 out of my closet, I think. And
I've got one of those. Remember the...
Because, like, if you're doing MAME, you just don't...
Thing?
if you're doing MAME, you just don't get the same feel. Like, if I pull my old Atari out, then I get the Atari thumb and the whole business, you know?
Well, I bought one of those not too long ago. They sold the it's Atari joystick, but it has, like, 10 of the Atari games.
Oh, the 10 games in it, yeah.
That was really good. But I bought a long time ago one of those. It was old Nintendo. It was, like, their attempt at 3D.
Mm-hmm.
You sat it on the table and you stuck your face into it. I have like two games. One of the reasons that it didn't go over very well was the fact that you couldn't take it anywhere. You had to like plug it in and sit it on your table, and then you know, sort of like playing it, you know, with your head stuck into the table. Mm-hmm. I guess it worked good for a 6-year-old, but for you know, if you were above 6, it was a little hard to get your head in that position for very long. But he used red and black as to try to make it the 3D. Mm-hmm. I have a tennis game on it and a couple other ones, and the tennis is actually sort of 3D. If I bought it, they were going out, you know, they were like trying to get rid of them, and it was like $25. I was like, yeah, I'll take it. What the hell? It'll go into my old junk that someone will eventually get
nostalgia collection. That's what it is, right?
Nostalgia.
It's good stuff, man.
Centipede.
One of these days, like, I'm going to have to whip out my Atari 2600 one of these days and show my daughter. You know,
this is how we used.
This
to
is
play.
How we used to be entertained. You know, when I was 10 years old.
My daughter would hate me if I did that. She'd be like, "Put the GameCube back on."
Yeah, that's what my daughter would be like. You know, Dad, that's really cool and all, but please plug the PlayStation back in.
Force them all to go back to that for a while.
Yeah,
to appreciate graphics. To appreciate 8-bit graphics.
that's like all of us. You remember what it was like after we've been playing Pac-Man for like 5 years, and then all of a sudden Dragon's Lair came out.
Oh, I love that one too.
Oh, dude, people were you walked by the arcade and people were welded to this thing, man, because it had 3D cartoon graphics and stuff.
And all of us was remembering
it's like one of the VCR games that they have now. You know what I mean? You go, choice this, choice that, and then you have to fast forward it to the right number on the counter or something like that.
It was basically just a laser disc.
Yeah.
And when you got to the end, it just replayed it going backwards. So you had to reverse all the commands.
You had to go.
If you got all the way to the end of it, and you started over again, and the way out of it again, the second way through was just reversing all the commands. It was like a mirror image of what it was the first time.
Oh yeah, I remember that was like the first game that cost 50 cents.
Yeah, I think that was up there.
Yeah,
too, yeah.
It was.
And then soon after that was Space Ace,
mm-hmm.
and then Cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Samurai Jack episode? Do you watch Samurai Jack?
I don't watch it very often.
Where he went to go, there was that village that was being terrorized by the dragon with bad breath.
No.
And he had to go fight the dragon.
Have bad breath?
And he came to a fork in the road, and he said, "Well, which path should I take?" He said, "The top one goes to the dragon's lair." And he said, "Well, where does the other one go?" Space Ace. It was pretty funny. It just said Space Ace. But I never saw anybody. Actually, that's not true. I saw somebody get to the end of Dragon's Lair, but I didn't pay attention. And I guess you went through and you had to get out.
When I worked in the grocery store, my boss at the time was addicted to that game. I mean, whenever you wanted to find out where he was in front of that game, and he got all the way through that and started over again. It was just a mirror image.
So what happens when you get to the end of the other one?
I don't know. I don't think he ever got to the end of the other one because I don't think he could play it long enough to get all the commands right. But
so there's no end to that, is there?
I don't know.
That's back in the days when games didn't have an end.
That's actually one of the. That's why you know that one comes up in the stores all the time. And I've been debating on whether just to pick that one up, just because, like I said, you know, it's a old corny game, and I happen to like those sort of things.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been thinking about that too. I was just wondering how good that is. It seems to be out for like every game system.
Yeah, it's out for. They put it out. They put Dragon. They put the trilogy of him out in like all the game systems. I just never get around to picking it up. But I should go get that one just because I buy a lot of other junk.
I'd like to too. You know, and that was one of the ones that I really enjoyed playing, even though it was dumb. You know, for the time, it was a cool thing. And
well, yeah, at the time, it was the best graphic out there because it just didn't. Nobody realized
you
at
went
the time
from like
you were watching a videotape. Anyway.
Yeah, you went from like Moon Patrol to a cartoon. You know what I mean? It was just
Moon Patrol, a little buggy.
Remember Tapper?
Yes.
Tapper. Burger Time.
I've got that in the MAME games here. I just don't have MAME set up over here.
Q-bert.
I got like a ton of MAME stuff.
Oh man.
Q-bert.
Zaxxon.
Zaxxon was cool.
There was a second Zaxxon. What was that called? It was a Super Zaxxon. That's right. Super Zaxxon.
Oh, I don't have MAME on.
You fought a dragon in that. Instead of what was a Zaxxon had a robot at the end or something?
Right.
And then the second one, Super Zaxxon, had a dragon. And then Xevious.
Yeah, that was a top down shooter.
Yep.
I dumped tons of quarters into that one, too.
The Tiger Shark. Was that at Tiger Shark where you were the old biplane, I think it was? It was like a top down shooter, a descendant of Xevious. Uh-huh. Kind of like Raiden. Raiden Triad, I think it was another one. And you pick up those were jets, but Tiger Shark was the. And Bump and Jump? Remember Bump and Jump?
No, I don't want
Bump and Jump was awesome, man. That was one of my favorite games.
Oh, what's this one, Alan? What is it?
I can't remember. I know what you're doing.
Spy Hunter.
Yeah,
Spy Hunter, man.
Peter goes.
We're running out of time, folks.
Oh, Link's getting bitchy. Gotta go. Oh, I'm sorry. That was bad language. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.
Pulling the Fleet Tech Show. Pulling the Fleet. Pulling the Fleet Tech Show. Pulling the Fleet. Pulling the Fleet Tech Show.